quorum.
Yes, I will do a roll call. Ms. Shreve?
Excuse me?
I'm doing a roll call vote for board members. If you're on the line as a participant, please mute your phone and wait until your matter is addressed. Thank you. Ms. Shreve?
Yes.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Flowers?
Present.
Dr. Bohansky?
Present.
Dr. Davy? Dr. Davy?
Dr. Davy?
Mr. Dinar?
Mr. Dinar, I think you're on mute.
I'm present. Can you hear me now? This is Dinar.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Dr.
Thank
Gill?
You. Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
We have 8 board members. We still have a quorum even without Dr. Davy.
All right. Dr. Davy, did you join on yet? All right. The time now is 10:02, and we're moving to agenda item 10, discussion, consideration, and possible action relating to initial case reviews and possible consolidation with the respondent's current consent agreement. I want to remind the board members that the purpose of the initial review is for the board to determine whether there may be a violation of rule or statute. The board is not conducting an informal interview for these cases listed on the agenda item today. The board may go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.03A2 to review confidential records, or ARS 38431.03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the attorney. What I'd like to do with these cases is I would like each case lead to give a factual summary of the case. The Dr. Denbor and his attorney submitted a response that included, please put your phone on mute. If you're not, please put your phone on mute. There's a lot of feedback.
A lot of you.
If the case leads to the summary of the case, then I, at the end, will provide my present, and then I'll provide the response from Dr. Denbor and his attorney in regards to all of the cases, because they submitted to the board one response that encompassed all these cases. Does that make sense? So the first case is complaint number 2011. Dr. Denbor, Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the lead. Would you like to provide just a factual summary of the case?
Yes, Madam Chair. Complaint number 2011 is coming from a psychologist that took over some of the practice from Dr. Denbor. I think we've got some feedback. If everybody can put their phone on mute.
Yeah, I'm getting feedback too. Again, if you're not speaking, please put it on mute. Thank you.
TM submitted a complaint with concerns regarding the documentation of medical records in the files for Dr. Denbor, citing several clerical issues. She also noted concerns related to scoring mechanisms that were utilized that were not congruent or in line with the assessment procedures from the developers. She cited concerns related to potential copyright infringement of the reuse of the forms being outside of the standards of practice, and also noted that she had concerns related to supervision of the technicians and the overall role of the technicians in administering many of the assessments. Board staff did attempt to obtain a response from Dr. Denbor. Dr. Denbor was not able to provide the board a response in a timely fashion. He did ask his correspondence back and forth with the board. He was able to obtain legal representation. And during the complaint screening committee, there was a question that this complaint be, that they waive the complaint screening committee and this complaint move forward to the initial investigation phase. During the deliberation with the committee, I did question whether or not Dr. Dunbar was still practicing, of which he stated no. However, after follow-up by board staff with Dr. Dunbar, we received written confirmation that practice was still occurring. However, he was not practicing at that particular site. And that concludes my summary of that particular case.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. The next complaint is 2017. Dr. Dunbar, Dr. Bohansky, could you provide a factual summary? And again, I'll wrap it up with the responses back from Dr. Dunbar and his attorney.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and I'll try. Complaint number 2017 is by complainant GF. GF is a licensed naturopathic physician in Arizona. And Dr. GF reports that Dr. Denborg's practice, at that time Smart Brain Aging, received multiple loans from GF totaling several hundred thousand dollars. That Dr. Denborg essentially was using this in exchange for a percentage of the company back in the summer of this past year. Apparently in business dispute, a complainant apparently locked Dr. Denbor out of the business, and Dr. Denbor apparently saw this as a hostile takeover. GF filed a civil lawsuit against Dr. Denbor with litigation currently pending before another jurisdiction, a commercial court in Maricopa County. So we received a complaint that alleges that in the process of this takeover review and what have you, GF found what he describes as many unethical practices that Dr. Denbor was involved in, including insurance fraud and the use of unauthorized copyrighted materials and evaluation, photocopying testing materials and the like, providing treatment under false pretenses, and documentation issues that go with that. because we have kind of tied in some of those, that's essentially the scope of the complaints followed by GF.
Thank you. Dr. Bohansky, would you like to also continue on case number 2023?
Case number 2023 is filed by JR. JR is a licensed speech and language pathology assistant in Arizona, and JR was involved with Denbor in providing services through Smart Brain Aging. So he worked under the supervision of Dr. Denbor, and he complains that in 2019 that Dr. Denbor was involved in providing services that were unnecessary or what's the term I want to use, unnecessary or dangerous. Combination with a second employee, and there are many of these complaints are kind of tied up in with each other, but essentially involve improper psychological interpretation, testing, and diagnosis, questionable necessity for services being provided, inappropriate interpretation of psychometric test results, and the like. And that concludes that summary.
Thank you, Dr. Bohansky. Dr. Davis Wilson, would you like to provide a summary of 2037?
Yes, Madam Chair. 2037 is a complaint that was provided to the board on behalf of Aetna's Special Investigations Unit. Aetna's investigator, CA, contacted the board related to an investigation that Aetna conducted in response to a member complaint. The member had complained to Aetna that services were billed for that were not received, that they did not have direct contact with Dr. Dunbar, but rather with another individual who was seen on the campus of where their assisted living facility was. After review, Aetna did note that they found concerns regarding the practice of Dr. Dunbar, noting that some of the claims for services were of concern. However, at the conclusion of their review, they too received confirmation that Dr. Dunbar was no longer practicing, and due to the recoupment being small, decided that they were not going to pursue any further action. Dr. Dunbar is no longer paneled with Aetna, and so Aetna will follow the matter just to ensure that should any future occurring appear, they're able to monitor it. CA, the complainant, is no longer in her position, and so she did forward a new contact to the board regarding the matter. And then during the complaint screening committee, we noted that after several attempts, the board staff was unable to receive any documentation regarding this matter. At one point, it was stated that Dr. Dunbar had not heard about the matter, and had moved and therefore did not receive the notice. However, board staff was able to provide some emails relating to and confirming receipt of the complaint. At the time of the screening committee, Dr. Dunbar had not been represented by legal counsel and did request that we grant an extension on review of that particular case, of which the CSC opted not to accept that that motion and moved forward with review of the case. It was noted that Dr. Dunbar did not have access to the patient records, and therefore board staff did reach out to his former employer with a subpoena requesting all of the records from both patients JA and AA. After review, I did note several potential concerns with some rounding issues with billing, but more notably that many of the documentation and session notes are appear to be a kind of copy and paste fashion across each of the dates of service and even the members themselves, the patients receiving the services. I also noted that on more than one occasion, Dr. Dunbar did refer to JA, the husband of AA, as a female within the medical record documentation. And so we have, CFP has removed, has moved this forward to full board with several concerns and potential violations that have been cited and provided to you.
Great. Thank you so much. I'm going to provide an overview of complaint 2024, and then I'm going to provide an overview with, of Dr. Dunbar's and his representative, Mr. Eve's response. And at that point, we will then address each of these cases separately, so we can then have whoever, if the complainant is here, they can speak on that specific case. We can ask questions, and we'll go from there. So on complaint 2024, on December 2nd, 2019, the board office received an anonymous complaint that alleged the following. Dr. Dunbar was misleading the public by calling himself a doctor. Dr. Dunbar is not an MD, and he's calling himself a doctor in order to mislead the public and senior living communities and the public that he's not an MD. Dr. Dunbar misleads with his self-guided Celtrib entitled Chief Medical Officer on website. Dr. Denbor has self-referred clients by holding clients in without asking attendees to bring their medical information. He's also alleged that he's also defrauded the public by claiming he's a doctor at Barrel Neurological, and believe that Dr. Denbor bills under another one of his LLCs to Medicare. And then in regards to Dr. Denbor's response, on February 5th, the board office received Dr. Denbor's response to all the complaints in one correspondence through his attorney, Mr. Eves. And the responses, and I'm going to provide these in highlight. Dr. Denbor provides the following. In light of all the similar allegations contained in the complaint, there's a belief that the complaints were compelled by GF, Dr. Denbor's former partner and hard money lender. None of these complaints arise from allegations made by a patient, nor raise new issues. The four complainants represent an effort by GF and his associate to play to basically pile on allegations in the exact same practice area that the board has already expressed concern about: billing, use of diagnosis instruments, copyright infringement, general misrepresentation. In late 2018, the board appointed Dr. Toma to be Dr. Denbor's practice manager, and in the last year, they have worked together to improve Dr. Denbor's practice. In his quarterly reports, Dr. Toma reports significant improvements in Dr. Denbor's practices and that he is now compliant with these standards. It would be unfair to open four new complaints against Dr. Denbor based on general allegations that have already been addressed by the board in this current consent agreement. Dr. Denbor provides the following background regarding the complainant's relationship to him. GF is a naturopathic physician and hard money lender. GF does not possess qualifications or training to practice as a neuropsychologist. In March and June of 2019, GF made four loans to Smart Brain Aging for a combined total of $250,000. In July of 2019, GF invested in the company in consideration for percentage of the control of the company. Dr. Denbor believes that GF could help with the business operations, which would allow Dr. Denbor to do more clinical. Over the next 3 weeks, Dr. Denbor characterized it as it was a hostile takeover of the company Dr. Denbor had. And in 2019, Dr. Denbor filed a complaint against AGF with the Arizona Neuropathic Physicians Medical Board for professional misconduct. TM, who is the complainant in 2011, is an employee of GF and was hired on shortly after Dr. Denbor's removal from the company. TM is a clinical psychologist, not a neuropsychologist. On the website of her practice, it describes her as a life coach and specialist in energy healing. Dr. Denbor says he's never had contact with TM and she's never observed him in practice or training. In regards to case 2023, JR is a speech language, JR is the complainant. He's a speech language assistant employed by Smart Brain Aging prior to and after Dr. Denbor's termination. She has stayed on as an employee under GF's employment. What are JR's responsibilities? Was to provide speech therapy to residents at the Thunderbird Senior Living Center. It is thought that the anonymous complaint 2024 came from that senior living center based on the address that was given. Dr. Denbor responds that the allegations that he incorrectly administered, scored, and interpreted neuropsychological tests, he provides the following, that he follows all standard procedures in the administration, scoring, and interpretation. He relied on all statistical scoring guidelines and normative values. The complainants have no proof to corroborate their allegations that Dr. Denbor's testing and scoring methods are flawed. Although Dr. Denbor acknowledges on occasion the neuropsychological tests administered by Dr. Denbor and his staff were not the complete test, he asserts that it is standard and acceptable practice to administer incomplete portions of certain standardized tests such as a WAIS, Dr. Helma has examined and approved the test battery in question. He confirmed that the test battery relied upon Dr. Denbor is considered standard in the area of neuropsychological assessments of geriatric patients. Dr. Denbor flatly denies the allegations that he simply signed the final reports and provided it to staff. Dr. Denbor responds to the allegation regarding his billing practices with the following. None of the complainants have had any exposure to Dr. Denbor's treatment sessions and therefore are not qualified to opine on the accuracy of the billing. These four complainants only served to dredge up only past issues regarding Dr. Denbar's billing practices, which have already been addressed by the board. Dr. Denbor denies that he ever billed for sessions that he never took, that never took place, or that he double charged patients for a single session. He also denies he ever waived co-pays for patients, and all efforts are made to collect co-pays. For the last year, Dr. Denbor has been addressing the billing practices in response to complaint 1826 by Ruth Cross. Dr. Denbor responds to the allegations of using improper copyright material as follows, that he's never violated copyright materials, only utilized open source material. And with regards to the use of material that was copyrighted, Dr. Denbor acknowledges that he changed those copyright puzzles and gained sufficiently so that to avoid the violation of copyright laws. The complainants have not produced any evidence to support their allegations. In response to his claim for misrepresentation of self-referring patients, he states the following. Dr. Denbor denies he ever having represented that he was a medical doctor or referring himself as a doctor of Barrow Neurological Institute, although he indicated he attended Barrow Neurological Institute for his postdoctoral residency, which is accurate. He denies providing treatment to patients under false pretenses. It is correct that Dr. Denbor's bills under another LLC, which has been discussed at prior board meetings. It is true that Dr. Denbor has asked residents at Thunderbird Senior Living to bring their Medicare cards and other insurance documentation. For individuals who would like to participate in the SMART program, Dr. Denbor validates the cards and informs them of their copay amounts. This process was observed by Dr. Toma, the practice monitor, and was found to be a valid way of operating. Dr. Denbor concludes the following, given that they also provided supplemental information on February 10th that a Dr. Kaufman, who is a PhD, reviewed the same reports that was relied upon by Dr. Lichtenberg, and that Dr. Kaufman states that Dr. Lichtenberg's reports provide only general critiques of Dr. Denbor's psychology practice without asserting any specific violations of standard of care for the cases, that there's insufficient evidence presented in the five cases reviewed to support the applicable burden of proof that Dr. Denbor violated the minimal standard of care. Dr. Kaufman and an expert in Dr. Kaufman's expert opinion confirms the final report of Dr. Toma, the practice monitor. Therefore, the board now has received favorable reports from two separate local neuropsychologists who both found Dr. Denbor's practice satisfied and with meets the standard of care. They also provided another response on February 26th in regards to a letter regarding the audit. The letter serves as to introduce the attached audit report that was completed by Darcy Stain, an audit a billing expert who has 10 years of revenue cycle experience. And in her review of the patient reports, billing registers, and informed consent patients, she validates Dr. Denbor's billing methodology. She opined that the billing register appears to support the billing amount for each date of the service. She noted that CPT code 96119 for neurological testing was appropriate code to use. In addition, she reports include two letters from other individuals supporting Dr. Denbor's billing practices. And that concludes my the summary, just of what their response is. I'd like to now go back to complaint 2011. And remember, this is just initial review. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the lead on that. I believe complainant TM, are you present? I do not hear it. We've already had a summary of the case. TM is not. Dr. Genbor or Mr. Eves, are you present? You need to take yourself off mute.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Would you like to make any statements? And we may have questions for you.
Yeah, I believe that Mr. Eves is going to begin by making a statement, and I think he had a question first, and then I can follow.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Eves?
He's muted.
I think you're muted, Mr. Eves. All right. Can Mr. Eves, can you hear me? Okay, can you hang up and call back in using the number, see if that helps?
Krishna, can we unmute him?
Mr. Eves, we can hear you now, I think. Okay.
I'm getting a lot of heavy breathing. Say something.
Hold on. He's dialing in.
Ms. Sharif, can you hear me?
I can, yes. Thank you.
Okay,
all
thanks.
Right, go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. The procedural aspects of this meeting today are a little odd, so if I'm going beyond what you want me to address, just tell me. But so I just kind of wanted to give a little bit of procedural history. I know that there are new board members who haven't been here for the entire time. John has been before this board. But this started with three complaints involving many of the same practice issues that have been discussed and summarized here today. Report writing, billing issues, issues with employees, those sorts of things. And he was placed on probation and given a practice monitor. John has at all times been cooperative and willing to do whatever he could for this to get himself back in line to do the practice that he needs to do in this community. He practiced for a year with Dr. John Toma. Dr. Toma looked at John's practice from top to bottom and wrote nothing but glowing reports to this board. And I know that this board remembers hearing from Dr. Toma live and in person and saying that he felt that Dr. Denbor met the standards of practice to practice in this community. So I just kind of wanted to point out that most of the complaints that have been summarized here today relate to reports that were written before John participated in the practice monitoring program. And many of the practices relate to things that occurred before he had participated in the practice monitoring program. And so I think that's an important part of this today, is just to say that I don't think that I think it needs to be considered, let me put it that way, that these practices were already looked at. This board meted out a consequence for Dr. Denbor for many of these practices. And he did what he was asked to do, and he did it well, according to the practice monitor. I think Dr. Toma is also important because he is an expert in this case. He is a board-appointed expert he's the expert who has the closest, the best, and the most detailed knowledge of Dr. Denbor's practice. Spent a year with him, went over reports with him, looked at his billing practices, looked at his informed consents, looked at every aspect of his practice at this board's request. He did that. And in his writings and in his personal appearances before this board, he's told you this is a guy who's meeting the standards of practice that he needs to meet. I think, and from my perspective, this board knows that I've defended a lot of cases here. This has been a really tough case to defend because it's one of those cases where we start off with a few allegations here and there, and all of a sudden we're defending every aspect of this man's practice. And maybe some of the criticisms are fair, but it's really difficult to track what he's on trial for. I think it's very difficult to address each and every one of the allegations that have come up. We've tried to do that. We've tried to do that by supplying expert reports that address every question that's been raised. You know, the board hired Dr. Lichtenberg to look at this case, and Dr. Lichtenberg had a number of criticisms. His criticisms sort of rose to the level of saying, I think this merits further looking into. They weren't really strong criticisms. But when I go through those criticisms, I see that many of these have been addressed by others, and there's been a lot of disagreement. That's another one of the things that surprised me in these cases, is the vast amount of disagreement between neuropsychologists, even, about what the standards of practice require. And I think that the members of the board would probably agree with me that even among the board members, there's a great deal of disagreement about what's required for the practice of neuropsychology.
I can hear now. Can you hear now?
I don't know who that is, but I'll wait.
Okay, could you please put your phone on mute? If you're not Mr. E? Thank you. All right, go ahead, Mr. E.
And I'll continue. I was just going to say that we've even had debates at this board about what qualifications are necessary to call a person a neuropsychologist. So my point is that in the context of this board, there's a ton of disagreement among all of the people who are weighing in on these issues. I would say that in a case like this, where there is a lot of disagreement, I would urge this board to place a lot of emphasis on the evidence before the board. I think there are some very esteemed psychologists on this board who have very valuable and strong opinions about various things. And I respect each and every one of you. But you're the trier of fact in this case. The board members are not the experts and not the expert witnesses. The evidence that's needed to take drastic action against John Denbor would be evidence that comes from an expert. The only experts that this board has that it appointed or asked to participate are Dr. Thoma and Dr. Lichtenberg. Dr. Lichtenberg's opinions are very limited, and they're based on the review of 5 patients. The board's other expert, Dr. Thoma, has a very detailed review of John's practice and has given glowing praise for him and said that he meets the standards. In addition to those two experts, we've submitted documents and reports from a number of experts in this case. And Ms. Reed, thank you for summarizing Dr. Kaufman's reports. But Dr. Kaufman definitely believes that Dr. Lichtenberg's met the standard of care. He's looked at the same 5 patients that Dr. Lichtenberg looked at. He looked at John's systems, his intake processes, his billing and collections model. He's looked at all of that stuff. And Dr. Kaufman's opinions squared with those of Dr. Thoma. He said that after reading Dr. Lichtenberg's report, he disagrees with Dr. Lichtenberg, and he finds that Dr. Thoma's opinion is much more credible because he met with Dr. Denbor regularly. He pointed out that Dr. Lichtenberg's report failed to reach the level of clear and convincing evidence that Dr. Denbor violated any standards of care. And he says, look, I've looked at those 5 patient records, and there's nothing in there which overcomes the presumption that Dr. Denbor is due in these cases. We also submitted a letter from Dr. Paul Nussbaum. He is the foremost international expert of the use of cognitive training for dementia mitigation in the country, maybe the world. There have been some questions raised at times when we were before this board about whether John was engaging in a program that had scientific legitimacy. I hope that we've put that to rest completely. I think Dr. Nussbaum's report, if that wasn't put to rest before that, I think it should be. As the leading expert in that area, Dr. Nussbaum says that this is an area that should be explored and that John's program specifically has a place in that marketplace. He says that there are definite benefits of cognitive training and that these stimulating environments give us confidence that the use of cognitive training does create improvements here. Dr. Nussbaum says, look, there's a big difference between prevention and mitigation, and that's an issue that's come up here too. John acknowledges the same thing. There are neuropsychologists out there who want to claim that there's dementia prevention and it's possible. And while that term may get used accidentally sometimes, even by me in defending these cases, John understands clearly that his program is a dementia mitigation program, not a prevention program. And that's what it's been designed for, and that's what it's been, that's what it has been marketed as. We also submitted reports from a couple of auditors, Mindy Harris and Darcy Sane. You have their reports. I won't go through them in detail. Both of these people are very qualified bill auditors. One of them has been the bill auditor for Dignity Health for 10 years. Both of them went through the same billing records that Dr. Lichtenberg looked at. Both of them reviewed every aspect of the billing, the corresponding reports, the time spent, and the justification for the time spent. And their opinions were that he was using the appropriate codes, there were no instances of overbilling for time, and that in some instances he had underbilled for units that he could have billed. Another issue that has come up over and over again with this board is, it's, I don't think it's ever been noticed in writing, but certainly board members have asked about it every time we've been here, is this practice of billing multiple Medicare units when you're billing another insurance company like Blue Cross Blue Shield. And at times, board members have scratched their heads and said, gosh, I've never heard of this, and this is something foreign to me, and there's been an implication that because you haven't heard of it, somehow it's wrong. What we have submitted is another couple of letters and authority to show that this is, in fact, a common practice, and I would submit it's probably happening in some of your practices. But what's going on here, just to be clear with everyone, is that these are not Medicare bills. These are bills for Blue Cross Blue Shield. Blue Cross Blue Shield has agreed to a payment and reimbursement plan that is based on Medicare units, but Blue Cross Blue Shield agrees to pay for more. They agree to reimburse at a higher rate than Medicare does. And so the agreement is you can bill two times or three times the Medicare unit when you're billing Blue Cross Blue Shield. We've submitted letters to you from Antonio Puente, and I know that you know who he is. He's a very distinguished psychologist and someone who is actually has been the head of Division 40. And so this is the person who knows what he's talking about. He has supported John's program. He has supported John's billing practice, the one that I just described to you as being legitimate. We also submitted a letter from Ryan Davis, who is a very well-respected billing expert. He has also supported that billing practice. So the only other expert that we've submitted is we submitted a very short email from Dr. Mark Barisa, who is also a very well-known psychologist and has written a book called Business of Neuropsychology. And Dr. Barisa was very, very supportive of John. Unfortunately, Dr. Barisa suffered a personal loss when he was about to write a report for us. So that's why you got a one-line email from him. But, you know, Dr. Barisa knows John, he knows his practice, and has been very supportive, and that's, I think, reflected at least in his email. So from an evidentiary perspective, I think what you have before you is you have a lot of facts. Those facts require you to apply assumptions, and you're certainly within your rights to do that. I think the question before you is, are you going to assume that John is a person who's acting with an evil mind and try to take drastic action against him? Or are you going to assume that the person before you is someone who is kind, who is passionate about his work, who is going through a very difficult time in his life, with which you are all familiar, and someone who, despite all of that, has been here and been sincere and who has participated in every activity this board has asked him to do and has done everything that this board wants him to do to get his practice back in line and has been successful in those efforts to the point that your own practice monitor has said, I give him my stamp of approval to release him into the public to practice. I think that we could go through the facts of every complaint, and I don't want to do that, though, in this presentation. I think that you're going to ask those questions to John. I think that those questions have been asked many times before, and I think he's ready to answer them. So I will conclude my comments at this point and turn everything over to Dr. Denbor. I'm sorry. I should turn it over to you, Ms.
All right. Thank you, Mr. H, for your comments. All right, so what I'd like to do is, again, I want to focus right now on this complaint 2011. TM is not here. Are there any questions? Thank you, Mr. Eves. Are any questions for Dr. Dunbar in regards to this case? Okay, if not, I want to move to complaint number 2017. GF is the complainant. GF, are you with us? If you want to unmute.
I am here with you on the phone, yeah.
All right, do you have any comments?
I have some notes. Yeah, I have some notes that I would like to read, and I appreciate Denbor's response. And he obviously hasn't seen the evidence that we've provided, and I would say to the board that his response makes it even easier to find out what the truth is. Anyway, here's my statement. My name is Dr. Joaquino Franco. I'm a licensed naturopathic medical doctor in the state of Arizona.
You know, if you want to just use your initials, that would be appropriate.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, thank you.
I'm a licensed naturopathic medical doctor in the state of Arizona since 2004. License number 04839. I met John Denbor last February as an investor. At the time, he made claims that he was a clinical neuropsychologist. He said that he completed his fellowship from Barrow Neurologic Institute. And when he was training at Harvard, he was doing research there on mitigation of dementia. And he developed a program and showed that he could push back the onset of dementia by 2.25 years. And then he claimed that he spent another few years getting Medicare approval, and he had the only program that could delay or mitigate the onset of dementia that was approved by Medicare. I saw the financials. He showed me the bank statements. They were bringing in money. In July of 2019, I decided to purchase 100% of the company. And there's a little bit of confusion there, and I don't know how somebody who purchases 100% can do a hostile takeover of their own company. But John had a 40% profit share, and he was one of the managers, and he was going to direct the company clinically from the, with respect to the practice of psychology. Anyway, after we purchased, we learned that everything that he had claimed was a lie. And there was a lot of omission. Number one, he was not trained at Harvard. This was something that he even, I've heard him many times publicly, even on the internet, claiming to the public when he went to Harvard, not true. He did not graduate from Barrow Neurologic, although he likes to say that. It's on his social media. He's been on his social media, graduated from Barrow Neurologic. No, he didn't. He failed. The board has the record of his failure for his behavioral issues. He's not a neuropsychologist, okay? He's not. Neither is Dr. Tomei here, John's representative, Artie, claim that they're the only neuropsychologist. It's a joke. He's not a neuropsychologist, even though he tells the public over and over and over that he is. And the board knows this when he was trying to fool the board into believing that he was the smartest person in the room, and the board wasn't smart enough to rule over these cases. He did not create a unique set of workbooks called the SMART program. His program was not the only program to delay or mitigate the onset of dementia. He stole these activities and content of the workbooks and the program he researched. And the program that he researched was actually the property of at least 31 other properly copyrighted authors. Now, the board has these things. The board has these evidence. He had said in his response that he made enough changes to avoid the copyright. They're almost identical. We also learned that when I was purchasing the company that he omitted the fact that he was under investigation by Blue Cross Blue Shield, by Medicare, right? He just omitted these things. He was officially terminated and served in writing August 26, 2019 for various reasons that the board has on file. A quick overview. He abandoned his patients. He just left. He had planned in advance and left for weeks out of state. Without the management's permission, he claimed a family emergency that his son needed to have brain surgery while his wife's posting on Facebook and his son's perfectly fine. John Denbor is a thief. He was caught stealing company funds and had instructed staff under fear of being fired to deposit thousands of dollars of company funds into his personal bank account. I know this because we have the recording. If the board would like to see the recordings, we have it. He misappropriated $50,000 of company funds to himself, his wife, and his mother. He provided, his provider contracts were terminated from multiple insurance companies due to providing medically unnecessary treatment. That was another reason he was terminated, and he didn't disclose this to me, the purchaser of the company. He ruined the company's reputation and billing abilities with insurance companies for all the providers. I think the board has that letter from Blue Cross Blue Shield saying all associates of the practice can no longer bill because of his misconduct. He lied to me and the manager about his probation status with this board on July 16th, 2019, and I've provided the board the audio file and transcript of him lying that his probation ended after 6 months. In fact, he's still on probation today, almost another year later. On top of this, he submitted false loan applications to various lenders, claiming he was still owner of the company, and he wasn't. Requesting hundreds of thousands of dollars. So after he was fired, the staff, they no longer needed to be afraid of being fired for exposing Denbor's practices. This is where we really got to the bottom of what was going on. We had quickly replaced Denbor's positions and also learned how the business had been fraudulently run in regard to the practice of psychology. I have submitted affidavits of numerous employees that corroborate the physical evidence against Denbor for theft, fraud, deceit, overbilling, coercion, and false advertising. Serious underlying criminal behavior was the foundation of Denbor's previous neuropsychology practice, and many patients were being harmed. I have learned a lot about this individual over the last year, and I'm in a unique position of knowledge, awareness, and understanding. I have all the evidence regarding Denbor's practice of psychology, Denbor's education and training, performance reports, the smart memory program books A through N, his research, raw data and findings, standard operating procedures for all the company's business processes, marketing presentations, the patient's psychology report, records, the reference ranges that he used to interpret psychological testing, medical billing, the company's mail, Denbor's work emails, since all his work came with the purchase of the company's domain, including staff, patient, and practice monitor correspondence. I've provided a lot of this to this board. These notes that I'm reading, I've made sure that everything that I say here can be validated with actual evidence, not just words. What you know about and what this board has been dealing with is only part of Denbor's criminal behavior. Its entirety is truly mind-boggling. As stated in the lawsuit against Denbor that I have already provided to this board months after he was fired, Denbor then committed loan fraud, wire fraud, bank fraud, identity fraud, and mail fraud. We actually hired a criminal attorney, and we have records of all of these things. These are not things that I provide to the board, but can, because we have it all. I think it is worth mentioning that Denbor's attorney has used Denbor's psychology license and status as a respected neuropsychologist in the community as a defense tactic for all the other fraud I mentioned. However, I do not think this board would agree that someone who commits theft, fraud, deceit, overbilling, coercion, and false advertising is a respected anybody in this community. But let's get back to the criminal behavior that relates to the practice of psychology. I'm addressing this board today to show without a doubt the massive extent of John Denbor's criminal behavior that relates to the practice of psychology. It is with this license, number BSY004026, for the practice of psychology in the state of Arizona, that he has been enabled and empowered to commit these crimes. The extent of these crimes is not well reflected in the number of complaints against him. There should be thousands. In every role of being a psychologist, Denbor has complaints against him. Multiple clients, staff members, fellow psychologists, and insurance companies have made formal complaints to this board against him, but many disgruntled people have not. I have provided evidence from letters, emails, patient medical and billing records of possibly harmed people that did not file complaints with this board. Many people did not even know they were harmed, such as patients, their families, overbilled for services, overdiagnosed with dementia, or even underdiagnosed with dementia. Overdiagnosing a person with dementia can be devastating for patients and their families. As I have shown specific patient examples to this board that used that specific word to describe their harm. And underdiagnosing is a sad loss of opportunity for patients and their families to receive early intervention. I have also shown that his practice monitor did not do his job, is not objective. By the way, is also not a neuropsychologist. And my concern ethically is where Denbor used Toma as a shield, even today and in the past. As Denbor's practice monitor, Toma said Denbor made many improvements, but Toma did not objectively review Denbor's illegal use of copyrighted assessment forms, illegal use of copyrighted smart treatments, illegal non-collection of co-pays, illegal use of time-based billing codes, illegal non-use of Medicare's advanced beneficiary notices, and grossly inaccurate scoring and interpretation of psychological tests. In this light, I strongly suggest complaints numbers 18-25, 18-26, 19-02 and 19-04 be re-reviewed with Thomas' testimony stricken from the record. Denbor is a confidence man, also known as a con man.
Sir, could you please just summarize what you leave your comments, please? And if the board has questions, we'll ask questions.
I'm almost finished. I'm right at the end.
Thank you.
Is that okay?
That's fine. Just if you could wrap it up, that would be great.
Okay. Earlier today, Denvor said that he did not waive any copays. I provided this board 1,900 copays that were waived in 2018 by themselves. And I've also provided emails from this board of Denvor, an email saying waiving the copays. In summary, my facts are Denvor has lied to this board regularly. He's committed countless acts of fraudulent removal of copyright notice, copyright infringement, copyright notice, misdiagnosis, overbilling, and insurance fraud. Dr. Toma is not a reliable source of information regarding Denvor. Dr. Lichtenberg, however, was extremely accurate in his assessment of Denvor, specifically where he noted that Denvor's frequent and inadequate testing appeared to be for maximizing billing and not for patient benefit. Denvor's research was based on stolen material, and all the journals should retract Denvor's research regarding the SMART program due to research misconduct. Denvor's license to practice psychology has severely damaged the well-being of the public and needs to be revoked for public safety.
Thank you for your comments.
It's Attorney General for proper criminal prosecution. I'm finished.
All right, thank you. Board members, any questions for GF? I guess I have a few. Just to confirm, what is you're a naturopathic physician?
That's correct.
And you're not a neuropsychologist?
I'm not a neuropsychologist.
And you're, what kind of testing background do you have?
I don't have any testing background.
Okay. And, all right. Board members, any questions for GM?
Yes. If I might.
Dr. Bohansky?
Doctor, are you a specialist in treating geriatric patients?
I am not a specialist in treating geriatric patients. My in purchasing this company, I was never intended to see any patients. In fact, I've never seen any patients at all in respect to this company.
Thank you. Your intent then was purely a financial investment in this company, and you're not a practitioner working with the geriatric population.
I am a practitioner. My clinic, Sunridge Medical, we treat a lot of geriatrics. We treat a lot of patients who have many conditions, a lot of very serious conditions, but this particular focus in dementia. With respect to testing, we wanted to hire experts, which we thought Denvor was, and a lot of the information that I've learned has been through other psychologists, some of which who replaced Denvor.
Okay. In that sense, doctor, do you have psychologists who work for you in your integrated fashion and natural ethic practice or in the clinic you purchased from Denvor?
Yes. Yes.
Have you had those psychologists review, or have they had a chance to take over the review of cases?
Well, one of the psychologists that replaced was Dr. TM in the previous complaint.
Okay. And one last question. In your statements, you noted that Dr. Denvor abandoned patients.
Mm-hmm.
When you purchased, I personally think abandoning patients is a huge issue. When you purchased or there was a transition of some sort, the term fired has been used or what have you, I don't know what happened in that practice. When there's a transition
of a practice. It's a large collection of patients in that practice. Those patients are notified, and services either to continue with that practice, or they're given names of others which they could continue treatment with. Was that done in your practice when that transition occurred?
I believe that was done. I believe that was done by Denbor. It was done 7 weeks after he was gone already. And there's some communications with Toma regarding this. And all he did was wanted to send copies of his SMART program to these patients. And since these patients, I think it was in the email from Toma, since these patients are not like, I believe that the term was, since they were more preventative patients, and they weren't, they were doing the treatments for prevention and not for serious illness, that it wasn't too concerning just to have them continue with their books. The problem, in my opinion, being these books are just stolen from children's books. Like, this is not a legitimate treatment based on research like everyone is told. These are just books you can buy off the internet, and they're just brain games. That's all it was.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor.
Doctor, I do have a question. TM, that person works for you, is that correct?
Yes,
what is her role?
She, when she started, we told her like which she was going to take over the patient care. We were in a rush to find somebody to take over. And when we hired her to take over, we had to stop everything anyway, because there was a whole bunch of misconduct that had gone.
Yeah. What I'm asking is she a licensed psychologist?
Yes, with your board. Yes.
Okay, and is she a neuropsychologist?
She was hired to do the testing. She's not a neuropsychologist.
Okay, that's my question.
She's not
right.
A neuropsychologist, yes.
Board members, any other questions for GF?
Madam Chair, I have a question. This is Dr. Gill.
Dr. Gill?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, go ahead, Dr. Gill.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yep.
I have just one direct question. Doctor, you made the statement that Dr. Denbor had waived copays, and I think in the record, you estimated we're talking about over $60,000. How do you know that it was waived, and what was the nature of the waiver? How was that communicated to the patients? By waive, what exactly do you mean?
Well, first of all, that number of 1,900 copays, that was just for 2018. Okay, and by the way, a lot of that was happening under Dr. Toma's supposed supervision. Okay, while Denbor was on probation, and we specifically chose 2018, because if we chose 2019, he could say, well, we just haven't collected them yet. But we know there was no attempt made to collect these. And
how do you know that?
I have emails. The reason I know that there's no attempt made is because even before these patients signed on, they were told the whole community the copays would be waived. This was used to entice, for example, Glencroft community you know, that whole entire community was waived.
Dr. Denbor told the patients that the copays would be waived.
Well, he told representatives of the practice and the patient and the patients.
Well, were you a witness to this?
We have the email. Tell Glenn Croft that the whole that the copays are waived. We have it happening on email to his mother for another community, saying waive the copays. The company will take care of it. And this was from Denbor to his mother, and then his mother spoke to the community and said to the representative of the community, spoke to Dr. Denbor, and he says the company is going to take care of all the copays.
Well, what was the date?
You guys should have
what was the date of that email?
The date of that one was, I believe, in May or June of 2019.
Okay.
And I can send another copy. So when they say that he's never waived copays, like, yeah, I mean, if you put the evidence with it, you know, it makes, you know, I think the truth is there.
Dr. Gill, do you have any other questions?
No, that's it for me. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Other board members, do you have questions?
Yes,
Dr. Meyer.
Yes.
Dr. Meyer and then Dr. Flowers.
Thank you, GS. One question I had is, you said that the contract to purchase the company, or that you were purchasing it at 100%. Is there a contract? Is there any documentation?
Absolutely. I believe I've supplied this to the board as well. And I was the 100% owner, and then there was a manager's agreement. There was three managers, myself, NG, and Denbor. And yeah, it was going to be a manager managed. So when Denbor was terminated as an employee, and then he was also terminated as a manager because he did things that managers shouldn't do, like ethical things like lie and cheat and steal and misappropriate funds. But
okay.
Even though he was,
can any staff or board members point me to this, or I've looked through the thousands of pages and I didn't see anything.
Dr. Meyer,
board staff.
Yes, this is Jennifer. So just a couple things to clarify. GF did submit some of the email correspondence about the waived copays. For reference, that starts on page 226 of the report. And then in regards to the operating agreement that GF was referencing, that is on page 2399.
Okay, thank you. That was my only question.
All right, are there any? Yes, Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I have one question. I'm wondering, with all of the difficulties with the company, if it is still operational.
That company is not operational. That company ceased operations when Denbor destroyed it with his actions of a whole different topic of criminal behavior that we haven't talked about, but that company ceased because we could no longer bill insurance anymore.
And so I'm wondering when the psychologist you hired looked at records and so on. Was the company still working then? I'm kind of unclear regarding
that. We hired the new psychologist, I believe, the same day that Denbor was terminated, and then we had some issues with insurance. In August, Denbor fraudulently locked us out of the company's
billing, but it didn't matter anyway because there was so much problems with the testing. The testers were not trained properly. The testers were not even certified in the specific test that they were given. So there's a little bit of a learning curve. So September was training time, and then the company was going to start again in October. We ended up not moving forward with the company, opening up another company, and getting the insurance credentials, which we've just gotten now. But yeah, so the attention to detail and the standards of practice have significantly gone up, even with the psychometrists actually being tested properly.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is you purchased a business, and then after a short time realized there was not much to be salvaged, so you started another business. Also with one psychologist at least, and doing other functions.
Yeah, so we purchased this business thinking that there was intellectual property, the SMART program, with its own proprietary unique exercises. We thought the company had insurance credentialing, and Denbor, with his, I'm going to say, evil mind, which is what the lawsuit that we filed against him is he knowingly deceived, right? Not just me, many, many investors. And what we purchased was nothing. Nothing. And then we didn't even have, and so he was lying, saying, I don't know anything about Blue Cross Blue Shield. And then we have audio of the recording of him on the phone with Blue Cross Blue Shield, and he knew everything. A Medicare investigator came to the practice a week before we purchased, and he neglected. So this is all fraud, right? And so he has a pretty uphill battle with his with the lawsuit that I filed, and now he's hiding in bankruptcy court. No problem, right? Because yeah, we're not going away. But yeah, we purchased nothing, essentially. Everything was fraud.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
So GF, you mentioned you've started another company. Are you still doing the focus of geriatrics and dementia?
Yeah, that company, because of COVID, for obvious reasons, is on hold. We just billed insurance for the first time last week, trying to get all our ducks in a row.
But it's for those same services.
We're not sure where it's going to go. We have different exercises that are being used. Some of the speech therapist exercises. I'm not sure if I have the education enough to speak on them, but they're actually not children's books. They're not like lies. And that's a big concern. The reason why I'm on this call today is not because I have business issues with, I can take care of those myself. But what has happened here is we have thousands of patients that have been misdiagnosed and lied to. And it was a whole scheme. The whole scheme to manipulate the most vulnerable people in our community. That's why I'm here today on this call.
Thank you for your comments. All right, anyone else from the board, any board members have any other questions? All right, GF, thanks for coming today. Thanks for participating. I'm now gonna move to Dr. Denbor. Mr. E, do you have any comments or would you like any regarding this case, specific
thank you.
One?
Thank you, Ms. Tree. I think that I'll turn it over to Dr. Denbor. He hasn't had a chance to make a general statement. I'd also like to point out that Dr. Denbor tells me that he has public members who would like to speak on his behalf at some point today. I'll leave it up to you as to when that should occur.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Denbor, did you want to have a comment regarding this case?
Yes, thank you. I would respectfully ask the board to consider this being a good time for my public members to be able to speak. Would that be possible?
Members of the board, Madam Chairman, this is Peggy Galpin. This is simply initial review of the case. This is not a time for the board to take testimony or, you know, testimony from character witness, essentially.
Okay, so because this is an initial review only to determine if there's enough to move it forward. So Dr. Denbor, would you like to just address the issues that are involved in this particular case where GF is the complainant?
Yes, and so just a quick procedural question, if I may. So are public members not allowed to speak at this board meeting, or when might they be given the opportunity? I'm not asking them to speak directly to this case, but I guess I was under the impression that public members would be able to speak at some point.
Ms. Galvin, do you want to address this?
There was a call to the public earlier this morning for anyone who wanted to address the board. That time has passed.
Ms. Galvin, this is Ms. Shreve. May I speak for a moment?
Yes.
I understand there may have been a very brief call to the public at the start of this meeting, but I was dialed into this meeting before 10 o'clock. I could not hear any audio from anyone. I saw a lot of faces moving, and I heard nothing for about the first 10 minutes of this meeting. When I finally did get audio to this meeting, the board members were already engaged in summary of the complaints that they're talking about. So if there was a call to the public, which I take your word that there was, it was brief, and I think the technical difficulties with this meeting made it impossible for those who wanted to speak up to say that they wanted to.
There was a call in the public with at about 8:30. It's on the agenda. It's like the second or third item on the agenda. No one was present to speak at that time. This is not a time for witnesses to offer testimonials.
I understand. Thank you.
All right, so, and Ms. Reeves, when you joined, we took a break between 9:50 and 10 o'clock, so you probably might have joined us during that break. So, going back to Mr. Denbor, did you have any comments in regards to this particular case, case 23, case 2017 regarding GF?
Yes, and I would just maybe make a note that that the three members were present at that time. But apparently they did not hear. They were given the directions for the call and apparently did not hear the request to speak.
Okay.
And so they were present at that time.
We're ready to testify now, too. We've been here for over an hour.
Okay.
We've asked
guys, I'm going to ask everybody to put their phone on mute. This is a public meeting. We have to follow an agenda. This is an open meeting. I'm asking right now, Dr. Denbor and Mr. Eaves are now on the focus of this case. Dr. Denbor, if you wanted to provide some comments, and then the board may have questions for you.
Can I just ask one more thing procedurally? Should I tell the three individuals to drop off the call at this point?
If that's what you'd like to do.
Okay. My understanding is they're not going to get a chance to speak today, so I think it would be best if they just dropped off the call.
Okay. Yeah, they won't be able to speak today.
Okay. So everybody can drop off the call at this point. Okay. So there's a lot of background noise here. I have a variety of things to say in regards to Dr. Franco's. I'm getting a significant background noise. I don't know if it's coming from me or not.
I know. I think we all are. Maybe just speak a little slower and clearer, and hopefully that will help everybody. As I think we're all getting a little bit of background noise.
Okay, that's a lot better there. Okay. Dr. F makes a variety of assertions that are all totally unfounded. One, his first assertion is regarding, let's sort of take this in order. First assertion is regards to the actual business aspects or business aspect of the sale of the company. Just to sort of give you a bit of background, Dr. F is a hard money lender. He is credentialed as a naturopathic physician in the state of Arizona, but he doesn't really practice. What he mostly does is engage in hard money loans. I came, as described to this board, I came to Dr. F because our company was in financial trouble, and I was referred to him by a bankruptcy attorney. Our company was considering bankruptcy. He invested in the company with 100% accurate information at all times, and that's been proven by the information that we have been submitted to the court. The allegations that he's made are essentially without merit and are slanderous in nature and not backed up by evidence. In terms of my training, I never indicated to anybody that I graduated from Harvard University. What I did indicate to two people is that I did my training at the VA Boston Healthcare System, where I had a dual affiliation and spent time at Harvard University Medical School and Boston University School of Medicine. You know, obviously this board or anybody else is feel free to check with Keith Shaw or Sigmund Hoff or Bill Milberg, who were my trainers during the year and a half to 2 years that I was at the Boston VA and Harvard, and they will confirm that what I did at that time was exactly what I said I did, which was provide to do research and do clinical practice in the area of geriatric neuropsychology, primarily developing, in terms of research, developing cognitive mechanisms or non-pharmaceutical mechanisms for the mitigation, the early detection and mitigation of dementia. That's subsequently been approved by the FDA through my research, through my collaborative research with other people throughout the country, et cetera. He mentions the book, the book exercises being non, that I violated copyright issues associated with that. That is entirely false. In fact, we supplied this board with a professional opinion. My understanding, the only opinion supplied to this board regarding the copyright issues, and that that was by Mr. Bellamy, an established copyright attorney here in Phoenix, and his opinion was that I did not violate copyright in any way, and we also consulted with various attorneys prior to this as well. As this board knows, I consulted with Tony Puente prior to the development of this program. As people know, Dr. Puente is a very well-respected neuropsychologist, expert in the field, expert in CPT billing and medical coding, and he's also was the former president of the American Psychological Association, as well as the former president of the National Academy of Neuropsychology, et cetera. So he actually wrote the CPT codes for neuropsychology in this area. So when I say that I got a unique linkage between a CPT code and an ICD code, that came directly from the head Medicare board, which Tony Puente was a member of. So I've submitted a letter to that behalf. I'm not sure, quite frankly, what more credentials I could have in this particular area than that. So I did not lie in any respect. Dr. Toma and I entered into a practice monitoring situation, which the board is well aware of. I don't believe, although it's not under my purview, that Dr. Toma has neglected his responsibility towards me. In fact, I did above and beyond what the board had asked me to, even paying Dr. Toma to conduct an exhaustive review of my practice and my SMART program at the time. So he came into the office, he observed everything from billing to documentation, he observed our patient calls, et cetera. I'll leave it up to the board's purview whether you believe Dr. Franco in the sense that Dr. Toma was acting not in accordance with his role as a practice monitor. I think we've had discussions about whether Dr. Toma is a neuropsychologist. I believe that Division 40 and the Division 40 statement regarding what a neuropsychologist is fits Dr. Toma, and I believe that's probably why the board chose him to be my practice monitor. We conducted multiple billing audits, including billing audits with Medicare representatives. In no time were we ever told by Medicare that, despite working with Noridian very specifically to conduct internal audits on our own volition, that our billing was anything but good. We've had zero money recouped from Medicare, and we've worked with them diligently on a national basis and a local basis. I've submitted a LCD rubric that encompassed all LCDs throughout the entire nation, and the approval that was received by all LCDs throughout the entire nation for approval to conduct this line of work. So we did this with the Center for Innovation Systems prior. We also conducted two billing audits by Darcy Singh and Mindy Harris. We also conducted a review of my practice by Dr. Nussbaum and by Dr. Barisa. So at this point, we have had five neuropsychologists. I'm counting Dr. Toma within that. A copyright lawyer, two billing auditors that have opined on my practice. I'm not going to get into in depth the salacious details of what Dr. Franco has done to me and my family over the last year and a half. I can only say that everything that I have done has been documented and is correct. I left my patients on a planned vacation on August 1st. Everybody was notified. Everybody knew about it, all staff, et cetera, and they knew that I was going to be gone for approximately 3 weeks. I sent out letters to that behalf, and when Dr. Franco came in and initiated, essentially locked me out physically from my practice, broke into my house, sent threatening text messages and emails to my wife, my mother, and then sent people to my wife's home in Wisconsin where we were, we then initiated law enforcement proceedings against Dr. Franco. I will have this board know that Dr. Franco works very directly. His operational director is Jesse Haggard, who has appeared before this board multiple times and is a convicted felon, also a naturopathic physician, a convicted felon that was convicted on money laundering and unfortunately killing a patient. Dr. Franco or Dr. F had sued me initially after I submitted a board complaint to the Naturopathic Board of Examiners against him and Dr. Haggard for inappropriately terminating more than 40 of our patients because they refused or they were not able to pay their copays. So in terms of the copay situation, I believe we described this to the board before, but we have a foundation named after my grandmother called the Gene Healing Dementia Prevention Foundation. And we had consulted an attorney and also consulted Medicare and Medicare Advantage plans and received authorization to pay their copays out of our foundation, which we did. And so we never once for any patient ever waived the copay. I never told any patient that they would not have to pay their copay.
Dr. Denver, sorry, could you repeat the name of the foundation? I couldn't hear you.
Gene, J-E-A-N, Healing, S-E-E-L-I-N-G, Dementia Prevention Foundation.
Thank you very much.
No problem. And as mentioned to this board, I believe multiple times before, we paid those copays out of our foundation for individuals that demonstrated economic hardship. I ran this by Dr. Toma. This is neither illegal, nor is it unethical, nor is it a procedural violation of any standard. Many people do this, from major hospital chains to local you know, businesses that serve medical and mental health. So sort of, I'm, you know, the language that Dr. F has used in this case is one of very much of one of certainty. If I committed a criminal violation, then I would encourage this board to consider that I have, on my own volition, at the advice of my attorneys, with my attorneys, went to the FBI multiple times on Dr. Franco and have turned over all information. I have been in contact with the Arizona AG's office regarding the steroid ring that Dr. Franco and other people have been running out of their own practice. I made a major mistake going to Dr. Franco in a time of need and entering into a business deal with him. And that mistake has cost me my company. It's cost me the mental health and stability of my family. We've had to move multiple times, hide our address, et cetera. And that's a mistake that I'll have to live with for the rest of my life. But any other allegation that Dr. Franco has made is completely without merit and completely false. What he did was, we all have this in documentation, he planned to fire me when I left on a planned vacation back to Wisconsin in August. We have documentation of this. And he planned to hire psychologist TM. And he did hire her. And again, she describes herself as an energy healer, has no neuropsychology background. And then I strongly believe, although I don't have evidence of this, persuaded her and many others to issue complaints against me in an attempt to further threaten my license. I could go on.
Thank you.
And I certainly have evidence, but I'll be open to board questioning.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Denbor?
This is Dr. Gill.
Dr. Gill?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I know you spoke about writing letters to people when you were terminated or when there was a hostile takeover. But in your view, you felt that you closed out or terminated these cases appropriately by contacting them, that you no longer would provide service. How exactly was that done again? Could you state that for us?
Yeah, no problem. So I, in approximately late, probably mid-August, I lost access to the bank accounts and everything that was entitled to me, so I knew something was going on. I contacted Mr. Eves and some people that I had that were still loyal to me within the company and kind of found out what Dr. F was doing. At that time, my understanding was that he and Dr. H, well, I think I can name Dr. Haggard, had terminated over 35 to 40 individuals due to they're not essentially paying copays. And what I did at that time was I, at the advice of Larry Cohen and Artie Eves, I drafted, and Dr. Toma, I drafted a letter that was approved by all three of them. I reached out to them all individually and spoke to all of them, and then I drafted a letter supplying them with three alternative places to go for neurology and or neuropsychology appointments.
Ms. Reed, may I address that briefly? This is already you.
Yes, Ms. Reed.
Yes, so Dr. Gill, I appreciate the question, and I think a couple of things are important to remember here. One is that the services of Smart Brain Aging continued. As you've heard today, a psychologist was hired the same day. It starts the same day that Dr. Denbor was terminated and locked out of the practice. The second thing that I would say is that Dr. Denbor was locked out of the practice. And when I say locked out of the practice, I mean he was denied access to any medical records, charts, anything having to do with former patients. So this is something that came as a complete surprise to Dr. Denbor and was something that caused him to have really very limited ability to find out what was going on with the patient. So in consultation with me and others, we did the best that we could to try to satisfy the obligations regarding termination of a patient relationship. But I would emphasize the vast majority of these patients continued on without a difference. It would be like if you were going to see a primary care physician in a large practice and the primary care physician that you had seen over time was gone suddenly when you showed up for one of your appointments. But there was another primary care physician who took over and seamlessly continued the treatment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Dr. Denbor?
This is Dr. Meyer.
Dr. Meyer.
Dr. Denbor, thank you. Question I had was, are you currently practicing as a licensed psychologist?
Sure. Yeah, and just can I elaborate?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Okay, great. So just to give the board a bit of a timeline, because I know this is complex. In approximately August, I was on vacation with my wife and son in Wisconsin. There was the fraudulent hostile takeover of the business. I was locked out physically from the building. I came back approximately Labor Day. My mother was involved in, who volunteered for our company, was involved in transitioning some of the documents out of the office. And she was, you know, further harassed by Franco or Dr. F, et cetera. And when I came back in October, or I came back in around Labor Day, I quickly, with the police's aid, gained access to my office. So they basically kicked out Dr. F and the employees that were working for him. But they had taken all the patient files at that time, and despite subpoenaing and attempting to get them through my attorneys, we have been unable to, essentially.
So are you practicing?
I'm sorry, I didn't answer. Are you practicing
as a licensed psychologist?
No, sir. And since that time, the only thing I've done since that time is I worked with essentially, I tried to restart the business briefly in October. It didn't work, and I saw one patient for sports psychology services. But I haven't been practicing since essentially January 1st.
Are there any other questions? Mr. Chair, can I point another thing out?
He's never been.
Wait.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mr. Eves. Just one at a time. It's Mr. Eves.
Yes, I was just going to say this board has never taken any action to tell Dr. Denbor that he could not practice. Obviously, you know, I think before he said he wasn't practicing, it's true. He's still open to practicing. I think he would still see clients if he could. But there's no restriction on his ability to practice. There never has been.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
My next question is, are you still under a consent agreement with this board?
That is my understanding, yes. But honestly, Mr. Eves and I have discussed that, and my impression was that
Dr. Denbor, I can't hear you.
I'm speaking. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Yeah, you just faded out. Go ahead. You were saying.
I'm sorry. Yeah, my impression was that I had ended my consent agreement with my time with Dr. Toma at the conclusion of our work together, and then had fulfilled the credit requirements necessary for that service.
Yeah, and Dr. Meyer, this is Artie Eves again. So procedurally, what happened was he fulfilled.
I can't hear anything from anybody.
Okay.
He fulfilled his practice.
Mr. Eves, go ahead.
He fulfilled his practice monitoring requirements, and Dr. Toma submitted a letter saying that he had met all of the requirements and should be released from his probation. There was a brief delay in Dr. Denbor getting some of his CME credit certificates that he was required to do to the board. He did those. At one of the board meetings, and it's public record, we had a discussion on in the open board that because of some new complaints had trickled in, at that point I think that there were three new complaints, we had a discussion about purposely keeping his probation open, not terminating the consent agreement, simply because there was a chance that we would wrap the new complaint into an extension of that consent agreement. So that was with the board's agreement and understanding. Dr. Meyer, if you look at the agenda for today, you'll see reflected in the title of this meeting and what we're here for, that that's exactly what's contemplated. It specifically
and if
says
I recall, Dr.
consideration.
Right, and Dr. Toma came to the board and gave a summary, as I recall, of his being a practice monitor. Are there any other questions?
But in the audio recording we heard with GF, Dr. Denbor, you said you were done with the consent and were not under any conditions with the board as of July 2019.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
I can address that too. He was under the impression that he was finished. He was under the impression that he was done. It wasn't until we came in for that meeting and we said, hey, we've completed all of the requirements, that the board said, well, we don't have proof of your continuing education credits, which he submitted.
But
I think
our last report from Dr. Toma was in October of 2019.
That's correct.
And Dr. Meyer, this is Jennifer. If I may clarify, the audio recording is from July 2019, and at that time, Dr. Denbor still was under Dr. Toma's practice monitoring.
Right. So I'm asking Dr. Denbor, why did you say you were no longer under any kind of monitoring and that had been resolved?
I'd have to review the recording again. But if I said that, I was definitely mistaken. I was totally aware and very much under Dr. Toma's practice monitoring at that time.
Okay. My final question is about, we also received some photographs of photocopies of copyrighted testing material that were submitted as evidence of you using photocopies. Did you make those photocopies? Were you using those photocopies?
I'd have to look at the photocopies. What exact photocopies are you referencing? There's some tests that I photocopy that I'm allowed to photocopy. There's the tests that I'm not allowed to photocopy, I do not photocopy.
Well, there were pictures of testing materials that are copyrighted. Let me try to find that page again.
And Dr. Meyer, this is Artie Eves. We've got literally thousands and thousands of pages of documents that have been reviewed. I know you all are aware of that. But do you have the ability to share screen with us? I know Zoom has that capability. You guys appear to have the pro version. Can you share screen and show us the document you're referring to specifically?
No, it looks, well, I don't see that option on mine.
I don't believe so, but what Dr. Meyer could do is reference the page number in the report file.
Sure.
Which Mr. Eves and Dr. Denbor have, and perhaps that would be the easiest way just to reference that page number.
Yes, this is the file with 3,641 pages that cover 2011, 2017, 2023, and 2024. On page 46.
Okay. Well, respectfully ask that you pause? Either I need to get that link to view that, which I'd be very happy to do. Would somebody be?
I don't think we have access to that.
This is Jennifer. Dr. Denbor, we did previously provide the report to Mr. Eves. However, I can certainly email you a link so you can look at that particular information. Just give me one moment.
I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Right. And who provided these copies, Jennifer?
For page 46?
Yeah.
That was provided by complainant GF.
So these copies are not filled out. They're just copies, they're photocopies. I mean, just want to point that out. They're just like copies of what the complainant had of the book.
Right. Sorry, can I ask a quick question without looking?
Sure.
Are these copies of the SMART workbook or are these copies of test protocol?
No, this is the WISC-4 digit span.
Okay.
There are copies. There's also symbol search. Then we get into photocopies of SMART, but we also have the TOM. Beck Anxiety Inventory. Some more of the WIMS. So my question is, were you using these photocopies in any way? Do you have any involvement in these photocopies?
I don't use photocopied material for testing. Like, the only photocopy.
Whoever please be on mute unless you are being asked to speak. I'm facilitating the meeting. If you'd like to speak, you can address me. So go ahead, Dr. Dunbar.
Who was that?
I'm Tammy Shreve. I'm the one facilitating.
I know, I understand.
So, yeah, somebody was trying to jump in and make some comments. So go ahead, Dr. Myers, did you have another question?
Dr. Dunbar, are you saying you did not make these photocopies and this was not used as part of your practice?
Well, I do make photocopies.
If this is Jean Galvin, this is the board attorney, you are not allowed to interrupt these proceedings. If that comment comes again, I'm going to ask the moderator to disconnect you from the call. This is a public meeting. You're still required to show some decorum. If you can't do that, you will be disconnected and prohibited from joining.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. All right, Dr. Dunbar.
Yeah, I'm sorry to ask this. I do want to look at the measures themselves. I did receive a link, but this link is for a interim consent agreement for Dr. Ashley McCall.
Okay. I guess the question, Mr. Dr. Dunbar, is did you photocopy copyrighted material and use it in your practice?
John, hold on. Ms. Shreve, this is already, I have to object here and say, I realize we're all trying to do the best we can under a difficult circumstance here, but it is impossible for John to answer direct questions about documents to which he does not have access and page numbering systems he doesn't have access to. And I'm not being critical of anyone. I understand that this is difficult. But he's just told you they sent him a link to try to give him access to those documents. He was unable, it was apparently a link to someone else's case. So unless we can put those documents in front of him, I don't think it's fair to question him about did you use this document or did you photocopy that document.
Okay.
We've already said okay, a copyright attorney, about all of his use of documents before he did that. There are documents he's permitted to photocopy. There are documents that he should not under copyright law. And he did it under the advice of an attorney, not me, someone that he consulted way back when he was setting up the practice.
All right, thank you. Dr. Myers. Anyone else have a question?
May I just answer that briefly?
Is this Dr. Dunbar?
It is, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
So as this board is aware, neuropsychologists and psychologists are able to copyright certain documents with permission from the publisher. I'll give you an example of that, trail making test A and B. If you obtain permission from the publisher to copy, and those documents are slightly amended, then it doesn't fall within copyright restriction. And I've done that with certain tests. I don't use the WISC 4. I haven't used it in 5 years, so I can't speak to that. The WASE symbol search and digit symbol coding, I think it may have been possible over the course of 3 or 4 years that I made probably between 5 and 10 copies of that for my personal use, and I did use them with patients. But it was not a regular standard practice in our profession to make copies of things that we did not obtain publisher permission to copyright for.
Sorry,
and again,
you.
I just all might assert that my practice, I ran that by Dr. Toma. Dr. Toma looked at all my files, including all the paper files of all the batteries that we used, and he was aware of what we were copying and what we weren't copying. And I also had Mr. Bellamy, the attorney, also write an opinion on the copyright letter.
All right. Thank you. All right. Are there any other further questions with Dr. Toma regarding this case?
Okay. Madam Chair,
Dr. Flowers?
Yes. I'm just wondering, I'm looking at the, you know, the board staff, the board members received a 3,641-page information in regard to these complaints. I'm wondering if counsel and he were provided the same thing.
Dr. Flowers,
Ms. Michelson,
I would like to clarify that the investigative report for all cases today were provided to Mr. Eve approximately 2 weeks ago. So what the board members are looking at today, Mr. Eve was provided that. I do not know if he forwarded that information to Dr. Dunbar or not, but we did provide it to them free of charge.
Okay, looking at it, I see the examples of photocopying starting on PDF page 46. And,
this is Dean Galvin, and as Artie has pointed out, his client doesn't have access to that document for whatever reason. If we want to ask questions about that, we can always provide that document to Mr. Eves and his client and submit the document with our question to him and ask to respond in writing if this matter continues on to the board, if that's agreed with everyone.
Okay.
And Ms. Galvin, can I just make a quick comment? I appreciate Ms. Michelson sending this document to me. I'm in the process of opening it. I have it here. So I'm guessing I'll have it open within a couple of minutes. I'm totally prepared to answer questions.
Yeah, so it'll take him just a couple minutes to download.
All right, are there any other questions that are not related to copywriting or copying materials for Dr. Dunbar?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Madam Chair? This is Dr. Gill, can you hear me? I wanted to ask Dr. Dunbar, there's guidelines from the American Psychological Association regarding standard of practice. It's called the Guidelines for Evaluation of Dementia and Age-Related Cognitive Change. It was produced in 2011. Are you familiar with those guidelines?
Very, sir. I mean, I would say that I have read it a couple of times. I haven't read it in the last.
And I know that you and your attorney don't want to be asked questions that have already been asked about your time with Dr. Toma. And I'm assuming that you learned a great deal from Dr. Toma during that time. If you were to conduct a neuropsychological evaluation and produce a report today, I'm wondering how that would look, particularly in light of Dr. Lichtenberg's commentary that you failed to indicate the medical history of the patient, what medications they were taking, and whether there are any side effects from those medications. And I'm wondering if your report today would look different from what we've seen during your time that you were being monitored by Dr. Toma.
Let me, and I really appreciate the comments. Let me just maybe clarify something. You know, I already, you know, my attorney, but I'm very open to answering any question that you have at any time. Unless Ari objects for some reason that we just had, I'm happy to answer questions regarding anything at any time. So just to maybe give you some context for this answer, when I was trained at the University of Montana under Dr. Stuart Hall, neuropsychologist, when I was trained at VA Boston, when I was trained under George Prigatano at Barrow and others, we were explicitly told not to list medications, and we were explicitly told not to list in-depth medical history. And the rationale for that is because we're not physicians. And they thought that there was a liability aspect to that, and they also thought that by listing medications and contraindications of those medications and side effects of those medications, that would open an avenue of which I was advised strongly not to go down. So when I approached that with Dr. Tolman, his stance on it, although certainly asked him directly, was everybody has their own style of writing reports. And it depends on where you were trained and what context that you're working in. I might respectfully say Dr. Lichtenberg is not a neuropsychologist. He's a geriatric psychologist. That being said, he may have his own style of writing a neuropsychology report, and I don't think it's wrong necessarily, and neither do I think my way of writing a neuropsychology report is wrong.
Does that also include medical history, not including medical history conversation?
Well, I do include medical history. I include about a paragraph and a half on medical history in each of my reports.
Well, in the reports I reviewed, I didn't see that. Particularly patient AB. I didn't see a medical history.
Well, I'd have to look at that document specifically, but when I list the reason for referral, I typically, in about 90% of my reports, write medical history, and I include two paragraphs under medical history. The reports that I wrote for Dr. Toma were listed in medical history.
And what about recommendations? Do you make recommendations?
Yes, sir.
If you were to evaluate them today, would you make recommendations?
I have never written a neuropsychology report without recommendations.
Okay.
And so I usually list between 3 and 5 recommendations. I've been practicing now for, 12 years or so, and I don't believe I've ever written a neuropsychology report without recommendations.
And when you initially, given the present moment, if you were to evaluate someone, maybe going to a nursing facility or whatever, and you would evaluate someone, how would you determine whether they would be in need of your services?
Typically I do evaluations specifically and only on referral. So all my outpatient practice which was about 50% of my business, was only on referral. So neurologist X or a general physician X or psychiatrist X refers me to a patient and they have a specific referral question. And my goal as a neuropsychologist is to construct a battery that sets about answering that referral question in the most efficient way possible.
Okay, and in reviewing the reports that I saw, I didn't see any documenting of maybe consulting with medical practitioners, including neurologists.
The first sentence, I'd like to maybe look at what you're looking at, but the first sentence almost always is reason for referral. And then I typically don't document in the report itself. I would just humbly suggest that it's not customary to say, I called neurologist X
I typically document that in the patient chart when I make a call.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Denbor.
No problem.
All right. Are there any further questions for Dr. Denbor regarding this particular case? All right, hearing none, we're going to just move forward then to complaint number 2023. Is JR present?
Yes, I'm present.
JR, thank you for being here today. Do you have any comments, any opening comments for the board?
Yes, I just had a
Who's that?
This is Dr. Denbor. I'm really sorry to interrupt. I just want to draw to the board's attention. My attorney did forward me the records from patient AB, and I just want to draw attention to the record. It says reason for referral. There's a whole paragraph there, and it says presenting concerns in medical background, and there's about two paragraphs there.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Denbor, for pointing that out. All right.
I'm going to
move on. Okay. That's okay. JR, did you have a couple comments? Did you have any comments?
Yes, I had a couple comments that concerns were raised to me by one of my clients saying that they had been billed for a psychotherapy session that did not take place. And she gave me a copy of the bill showing that she had been billed for psychotherapy but had never actually spoken to Dr. Denbor. And then I proceeded to ask all 16 of my clients to check their billings, and each one of them stated that they were billed for a 60-minute psychotherapy session that they could confirm did not take place. I also psychotherapy sessions because I was working with my client when Dr. Denbor called, and my client put him on speakerphone. It was a 2-minute and 50-second conversation. I was timing it because I was timing our session. Dr. Denbor was very vague, asked how he liked the program, said he was doing good in the program, and then to have a good day. Like I said, it was about 2-minute and 50-second conversation, and then he was billed for a psychotherapy session of 60 minutes.
Okay. Well, thank you for your comments. Board members, do you have any questions for JR? JR, are you currently working for the agency where Dr. Denbor was?
No, ma'am, I'm currently working for the Small Business Administration.
Okay, and when this occurred, did you raise these concerns to anybody?
Yes, I did. I spoke directly with my supervisor, and then I spoke directly with the office manager. I was told a couple different things. So with one of the clients in particular where she showed me the billing, she was contacted by the office saying that it was just a billing mistake, but that it did happen again. And I had raised my concern, like I said, with two office personnel and my supervisor, but they kind of sloughed it off as like, oh, it just must have been a mistake.
Okay. All right. Are there any of the other board members have questions? All right. We do appreciate you being here today. We're now going to ask any of the board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Denbor regarding complaint 2023? I do. Dr. Denbor, do you have any, how would you explain the billing accusations?
Yeah, well, I'd like to provide a bit of context, if I may. JR was an employee. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. JR was an employee of independent contractor of Smart Brain Aging at the time that I was essentially running the company. When the fraudulent takeover occurred by Dr. F, I called JR specifically in an attempt to reach out to her and tell her what was happening. and to tell her that she was not legally allowed to see any of her clients any longer, and to bill her clients under Medicare because the Medicare contract was mine. It was John Denbor's. It wasn't sold as part of the company. So all clinicians were informed of that. She was informed of that, and yet she continued to practice. We then had to call our contacts at the places that she was practicing and inform those contacts that she essentially shouldn't be allowed to continue to practice there because she was essentially falsely billing Medicare. When that happened, she was then removed from those facilities, and then the complaint was initiated. I never, ever billed for a two-minute session. I have a list of about 20 patients that I call every week, or I used to call every week just to check in on them to see how they're doing. Never would I submit billing for those things. They're typically, as she described, very short conversations, 2 to 3 minutes. Hi, how are you? How are you enjoying the program? Is there any problems that I should be aware of, et cetera? And I do never build, and I would challenge anybody to provide evidence of such billing. The sessions that I did bill for were under the 90837 code that was run by Tony Puente, and that was deemed by Medicare, by Noridian, who is our geographic representative, as an appropriate code to bill for a 60-minute psychotherapy session. So I did bill those codes for sessions that I conducted, okay. And those were documented and conducted appropriately.
All right, thank you. Are there any other questions for Dr. Denbor regarding case 2023? All right, hearing none, we're going to move to complaint 2024. This is an anonymous complaint, there's no one, the complainant's not here. Is there any questions for Dr. Denbor regarding complaint 2024? All right, hearing none, we're going to move to complaint number 2037.
Is it possible I can make a comment on 2024?
Regarding the anonymous complaint, yes, a short comment.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate that. So again, this originated supposedly from Thunderbird Senior Center where JR was working. I called after receiving this complaint, I had spoken multiple times to our contacts, the marketing director and the head director at Thunderbird Senior Living, and I had spoken to all the individuals there. Nobody had indicated any problem for the clients that I was working with, and the director said that they did not initiate the complaint, et cetera. They supposed, or at least alleged, that JR had submitted that complaint herself.
Okay, thank you. All right. Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I did have a question on that. We do show here that on the LinkedIn account, it says that Dr. Denbor is the founder and chief medical officer of Spar Brain Incorporated. And the website form says basically similar things, that Dr. Denbor is the chief medical officer, chief executive officer, and founder of Smart Brain Aging Incorporated. So I'm just wondering about the term chief medical officer. It sounds like you have like some kind of MBA or DO or something. Can you comment on that?
I did run it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, please, Dr. Denbor.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I can comment on it. I did run it by multiple individuals, including neuropsychologists that I work with that are chief medical officers of their own company. They indicated that they felt it was an appropriate term to use. I did run it by Tony Puente. He indicated that he felt it was an appropriate term to use. I did run it by Dr. Toma. He indicated that he thought it was an appropriate term to use, but he said that I might suggest changing it in the future. If I were to continue to work in that position, I would probably change it to chief scientific officer. But it was something that was run by multiple people and approved by other established colleagues at the time.
And Dr. Flowers, this is already Eve. I can tell you that this term, chief medical officer, causes a lot of confusion in litigation that I see all the time. People have a tendency to look at that, and because it uses the word medical, they think that there are some medical operations associated with it, but that's not true. Chief medical officers are administrative in nature. And I know I'm telling you, a lot of you this, you probably already know it, but chief medical officers are not providing medical MD services. What they're doing is overseeing the creation of policies and procedures and other administrative things. So it's an issue that comes up a lot. I don't like the term. I don't think it's a great term, but it's a term that a lot of statutes and regulations use, that we have to have someone who's in that office or position for certain organizations. It doesn't have to be an MD.
That being said, I do respect what Dr. Flowers is perhaps getting at, and I think like something like a chief scientific officer or chief of clinical services would have been a better fit in a more appropriate term. And if I were to go forward in this company or any position, I would certainly use those terms as opposed to chief medical officer.
Thank you for your comment.
All right. Are there any other comments? All right, moving to case 2037. I believe the complainant, are they here, Ms. Poe?
This is Jennifer. Aetna Rep BB did email me a couple minutes ago that he was disconnected and would not be able to call in. However, he did relay in his email to me that he did listen to the summary provided by Dr. Davis Wilson and did not have any additional information to provide.
Okay, thanks. All right, thank you.
Ms. Reed, this is Jean Galvin, and I'm getting a text message from Dr. Borhansky that he has been kicked off and can't get back on. Can we maybe, Ms. Poe, can you try to reach out to rectify that issue?
Ms. Galvin, this is Artie Eve. It's 12:15. Should we take a little break and see if we could get Dr. Borhansky on the phone?
I'm fine with that. It's been a couple of hours.
Dr. Borhansky is saying he's okay. You can see him on the video. Dr. Borhansky can hear us.
Okay, so
I'm on.
So we're at the end of this. All right, so we're at the end of this complaint. Does anybody have a question for Dr. Denbar in regards to complaint 2037? We're hearing that Aetna doesn't have any, the representative from Aetna has nothing further to say as far as how it was introduced. All right, so is it the committee's pleasure that we take a break now for lunch and then reconvene to then discuss these cases? Or do you want to plow through?
Yes. Ms. Shreve, this is Dr. Denbor. May I make a comment on 2037?
A brief comment.
Yes, okay. So, as I indicated during the screening committee, these are individuals that I know, that I have come to know very well. I know them actually better than I know my typical clients. They're both from Wisconsin. They're both Packer fans. I've visited them multiple times. And the person that asked me to be in that facility, who's no longer there, the executive director, she can verify, as well as my check-in times, as well as the cameras that are in there, that I was there multiple times. And also, members of my staff that were alleged alleged to not have sessions occur. I just want to maybe note that this complaint came after I had reassumed control and had told the speech and language therapist that they were not allowed to see the clients at their facilities. And I would also have the board note that this was also JR's facility that she was working in.
All right, thank you.
And
Madam Chair,
Ms. Michelson, may I just add one thing, and Dr. Denbar may want to comment.
Okay.
I just want to clarify for complaint 20-37, which was discussed at the CSC meeting last month, that he did not submit a written response to the complaint, and the office has still not received any response from him on that.
All right, thank you. All right, are there any board members, do you want to continue, or would you like to take a break and come back?
Let's take a break.
All right, so let's do we have about a 30-minute break? Okay, Ms. Heidi, do we sign off? Do we stay on? Just put it on mute. What do you want us to do?
Please,
I can't hear you.
Please connect us to the meeting.
All right, so leave your, please stay connected. Just put your phones on mute, and we'll be back at 12:45.